This is such a really very beautiful reading somehow. It's every year when I hear it, I'm amazed that it touches my heart so deeply, because really Jesus is, it's a commandment that he's giving us. Be ye therefore perfect. And somehow it could be very threatening. And yet I never feel it that way. I mean, he goes on to say, this is how you do it, and gives us some hints in there. And the same with the Gita reading, which says thus, out of 1,000, one will strive, and out of 1,000 who strive, one will attain me. Again, it could be, we could be put off by that, yet somehow I always read it in such a way and feel it as such hope, because even the very last line of the Gita that says, be that one, there's just such a sense of, we can do this. We could actually do this right now. That's what I always come away with, not the impossibility of it, but the absolute clarity of it. You know, I was thinking when I was reading it last night, this whole idea of perfection, we all have to get there. Not because we have to, not because there's a commandment, but because we will. It's the natural unfolding. It's the true state of the essence of who we are. So we'll all get there. But it really takes a great effort of will to even think about it. And as our affirmation said today, it takes just enormous courage to step onto this path and to believe deeply enough that God is always with us, that he's always acting through us, that what we see in our human capacity is nowhere near the limit of what we can do. To just hold onto that thought, even in fact, when everything in our mind, literally in our mind, is telling us the opposite. I was some time ago, maybe just a few months ago, in a little email back and forth with Dharma Raj in India. I think many of you know him. He and his wife, Dharmini, are the spiritual directors, the founders, which is important, and spiritual directors of Ananda Chennai. And Swamiji went to Chennai some years ago and he gave a talk there. And they rented a huge hall. Everybody thought it was too big. In fact, they had the people who rented the hall, they had them tape off a lot of it, because they thought, Swamiji just insisted on having this hall, but everybody else was thinking, you know, we're going to be like 30 of us sitting in this hall that can see 2,000 people. But as the evening went on, they had to keep taking the ropes away and taking the ropes away. And not only was the hall filled, but there were literally 1,000 people turned away. And so Swamiji said, look, even if 10% of these people come back, we need a center here. That's what he said to himself. What he did out loud, Dharma Raj tells this story. Dharma Raj says, so I woke up one morning. Now, Dharma Raj and Dharmini are living in Los Angeles, and they're actually growing the LA center and pretty happy, pretty settled there. Dharma Raj says, I woke up one morning and I read my email and I took off my glasses and I rubbed my eyes and I turned to Dharmini and I said, could you read this? I think he's telling us to go to Chennai. And he said it was sort of written like as if they had a choice, like you could go to Chennai or you could go to Chennai, you know? It was pretty clear. It was one of those times they were not going to say no. And when I've heard that story before, but when I hear it, I think to myself, what extraordinary, at least dynamic, if not divine courage. They just picked themselves up. This is the way it happens. Such faith in God it takes. It's not like, I mean, they're moving to a whole new country. We may think of LA as a different country, but it's really not. You know, they're pretty much still in the U.S., still speaking a language, and you really feel that something has to happen for us to be able to live like that. I think of that when I think of all of Ananda, the whole creation of everything. I don't think we take it for granted quite, but we're accustomed to it, at least I would say. But what about Swamiji just buying land and a few people coming and living in teepees and little old mobile homes and all of what happened in the coming together of Ananda, all of these stories that we heard? What courage and what faith and what belief and what awakened that in somebody? What has to happen to take us from this consciousness of the ego to live with God's reality and with the reality that if we let God work through us, even as this reading says, be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father in heaven. Christ is saying to us, you can do this. Last week, some of us were down in Los Angeles for their Yogananda Fest, which was fabulous. But on Sunday, Jyotish and Devi gave service. And I tried late last night to watch it again, there's something I want to communicate about it, but unfortunately it's not up yet. So Jyotish spoke first, and he first relayed a couple of his dreams to us. The dreams right now are not important, but he did it for a very particular reason. He spoke about how real a dream is when you're in it, and not just how real it is, but how in the dream there's no thought that there's anything else going on that you should be relating to. You're in the dream and you're relating to everything that's happening in the dream. Of course, we've all had dreams and we know how real they feel. But there's no clue within the dream. You're going to wake up. None of this is going to be real. You're going to look back. You're going to say how silly it is. Every once in a while, that's a part of the dream, but mostly not. Mostly we're in it. And he spoke about it with such clarity to say to us, this is what life is. And we're just living in a bigger dream where we absolutely believe. We don't go through life saying, is this it? Is this it? Is this true? Is that not true? Until we begin to work on it, which of course many of us here have at least begun to work on it. Otherwise, this is why it takes such a great effort of will and so much courage, because it just looks so real to us. And we can go very long periods of time without even thinking that we should be living in any other way, never mind realizing that God is working through us all the time. It's very challenging. It's very challenging to sort of transcend the dictates of human emotion, to really get outside of the force that drives us, and to be telling ourselves consciously in each moment, who can do this? We cannot do this. This is not our reality. We are made in the image of God. That's our truth. Not everything that our ego keeps telling us and wants us to hold on to. So it's very hard for us to believe that we can actually be perfect. Because what is Jesus talking about here when he's talking about perfection? He's talking about breaking completely out of ego consciousness, breaking all of the ties that we have with that, and opening up really our energetic spine, allowing energy to continue to flow, to gain energy, to be all headed in the right direction. This is exactly what we do when we sit to meditate, that we're trying to align all of that energy to have it all facing in one direction so that we can actually magnetize our spine in a way, our energetic being, so that we can be available to the magnetism of the divine, so that we can be uplifted enough, clear enough, to literally receive him. When Jesus said to as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God, what did he mean by receive? He meant be in your spine and be changing the energetic pattern. So we're not reaching out here, we're not being deluded by our ego, we're not being confused by these, what Master called, thwarting cross currents of ego that we all live with, but instead we become more and more and more clear that we want to be uplifted. And the more we work at that, the more easy it is for our teachers and for God himself to come and get us. And that really is what the perfection is. The perfection is breaking the ties and the bonds that the ego has to us and allowing ourselves to become soul-inspired, soul-guided beings. That's what Jesus is asking of us. This Gita reading that says, out of 1,000, one will seek me. And out of 1,000 who seek me, one will know me. Master has said to us over and over that what Krishna, because Master said to us, our percentages are better. I mean, he's made that very clear. He said it over and over. Swamiji's communicated. Those of us who are seeking, those of us who are making these efforts, that our percentages are much better than people who are still living a lot less consciously. And Master used the word, those who are earnestly seeking. And I just remembered last night how beautiful. Every Sunday we turn to the altar and we say, we earnestly seek communion with thy light. We earnestly seek communion in thy light. Bring it into our lives abundantly. It's very much about the earnestness with which we do that. And then Arjuna says to Krishna, what about those who don't make it in this life? What happens if we're earnestly seeking? And Krishna says, you'll be born into a family where you can realize God in the next life then. And that's what's happened to us. We have been put in a position right now. This is why I think I feel such hope, where we could realize God right now in this life. This is what's happening. It's not that God's going to escort us there sometime. He's doing it right now. That's why we're here. I've said it many times up here. I feel it deeply. We are the one in 1,000. We're on our way. We need to realize that we are not doing this by our own power. We're not this limited body consciousness. We are the people who want to live with higher consciousness. We're the people who want to live in the light. We're the people who want to be serving others. That's what we're doing with our whole life. That's why we're here. God will not let us down. How many times did Master say, you turn, I was just thinking a few weeks ago in the reading, there was the word intention in it. I don't remember what the reading was, and it came to me so clearly how important that was. How these words that get put in there, our intention, if our intention's in the right direction, how God will come. If we seek earnestly, if we tell ourselves, now is the moment, this is the time, this life is the time. You know, I don't remember which of our teachers it was who said, you have an eternity to find God, and you have an eternity to suffer. It's like, just do it right now. Sri Yukteswar said, finding God will be the funeral of all human suffering. That's just such a beautiful line. Finding God is the funeral of all of your suffering. And this realization that really all we're doing is opening to God, to let him work through us. That we can't do it alone. We wouldn't want to do it alone. We're attuning ourselves with the divine to let him come through us and lead us. I heard a story just yesterday again that I had heard before, and I might even have shared here, about one of the members of our congregation. She's not here today, but she wouldn't mind if I told this story. She was living in San Francisco, had never been to Ananda, knew about Master, and really felt that she had to get down to Ananda. But she had no money. I mean, literally, almost no money. She would drive for Uber as much as she could. And she was just waiting for the opportunity, waiting for the opportunity. And one day she said to Master, "You must get me to Ananda." But she really literally couldn't come. She did not have the money to put gas in her car. As soon as she said that, just like that, the next person who wants a ride in her Uber wants a ride to SFO. And so she drives from the city down to SFO, and she's driving down, and she's talking to Master the whole way, and she's saying to Master, "I know that you're not going to leave me here. I know that you're going to show me the way." This person gets out of the car, and the next person who gets in her car needs a ride to Palo Alto. You know, I mean, when she said to me about that, she had apparently called and spoken to Ananda Prem on the phone. This is now a year and a half ago, at least, or 2 years ago. So she was headed to Ananda Prem. That's where she feels she had to get. She said, "I walked into the church, and I was just sobbing. Ananda Prem was saying to me, 'What is wrong? What's happening?' And she couldn't even get the words out. Just that extraordinary joy of feeling that God is the doer, that if we open to that, if we find that courage that Dharmaraj and Dharmini had and so many others have had, really, all we have to do then is get out of the way and let these masters work through us. The other story that came to me again yesterday is the story of that beautiful book called Left to Tell. And I know many of you know of it, but the Rwandan woman who, during the time of the Rwandan Holocaust, hid in a bathroom with seven other women for 91 days. She was locked in a bathroom, literally listening to her whole family just being brutally killed. You know, it was a very brutal sort of hands-on war. And they literally could not lay down. There was room in that bathroom, 91 days, starving. I mean, the minister would bring them a little bit of food every once in a while, but for one person to sit at a time, that's how they lived. And she just started praying. She came from a very devout Catholic family. Family that sounds like they were beautiful. I mean, true Christians in the best sense of that. But just prayed and prayed and prayed. A situation that so few people could live through. Never mind live with an open heart and find God in ways that she had never known him before. And just kept saying to Jesus, "You have to come to me. You have to come to me. How could you be doing this? How could you be doing this?" And really hating the people who were committing the atrocities until Jesus appeared to her and said those words that we've heard that he said to so many other saints. This woman is a saint. "These are all my children." And that is really not even so much the miracle. That's a miracle enough. But that woman found it in her to come back to Rwanda not that long later and forgive in person all of the people who had mutilated her whole family, brothers that she loved, parents, really good people. But she went and she gave them her forgiveness. That's pretty darn perfect. That is really being perfect. Open up, let God in, and begin to shed this sense of who we think we are, this limiting idea, these constantly limiting ideas of what we're able to do in the world. How many times do any of us find ourselves saying, I can't, I won't, it's not me. Watch yourself. For one day, watch yourself. Even if you don't happen to be one of those people who tends to be negative, who tends to see what's going to go wrong, how often we decide our own limitations ahead of time. And then, of course, we realize them. But what we're looking for, what we're aiming for, is what's called smriti, remembering we are not these limitations. We are so much more than this. You know, I had family service yesterday, and one of the kids was teasing me about my name, Shanti. He was just playing games. He was being cute and making up meanings for it. But I was thinking about ways that we have of remembering, because the Indian people really get it right. They give their children names of qualities that they can aspire to. And every time I sign my name on an email, every single time, you don't want to know how many emails I write in a day. It's huge. I say to myself, you're using the word blessings and you're saying Shanti. Be with that for a moment. So we can do that by taking on a name, by thinking that way, by renewing our vows every day, by literally whatever vow anybody's taken. And if you haven't taken a vow, by using some affirmation and put it in front of you and repeat it to begin to remind yourself who you are. This is harder than we think to remember who we are. There's a wonderful book that Swamiji wrote. It's a challenging book. It's called Sadhu Beware. It's a book about a life of renunciation. But in there, there's a whole chapter where Swamiji, it's called Transcending the Ego. And he just gives us 30 or 30-some little ways. What do you do when somebody criticizes you? What do you do when somebody points out some of the ways that you, in fact, are being difficult, even if it's true? What do you do when people praise you? All of these, he goes through all of the things that happen to all of us almost every day. And he says, here is how you can begin to react to these things, to transcend the ego, and to begin to remember the joy that we are, the light that we are, the sincerity that we are, any spiritual quality, the devotion in our hearts. Every time we behave in any one of those ways, we feel joy, we feel ourselves practicing devotion, opening our hearts. Ah, this is it, we can say, trying to watch where our consciousness is. It's an amazing thing. You know, somebody pointed out something to me, I think I mentioned this just a few weeks ago, a way that I was being negative in the world not that long ago. You know, my mind did all of the trips that it wants to do. Could they have told me in a different way? I'm sure they're not projecting. I was running a little trip for about 10 minutes. That's about how long it took me. And then I said to myself, what does any of that matter? If there's something here for you to learn, learn it. Just makes you a better person. Why run by habit all of the things that the ego wants to do It wants to say, get them. Show them how they're wrong. That's not who you are. That may be who you are 1% of the time, but look at all the other wonderful things you do. It just wants to keep fooling us like that. Every single one of those times is an opportunity for us to grow beyond ego consciousness. I sat with that for a week, day and night. I'm still sitting with it. But day and night for a week, until literally I felt my consciousness shift. A shift in consciousness. That's what we're looking for. When I felt that, I was down on my knees thanking God. That wasn't struggling, trying. We are doing all of these practices, all of the 30-something Swamiji lists, renewing our vows every day, thinking about what our names mean or other people's names mean, any way that we can move our consciousness until we feel it shift. And when it does, you know that you could never make that same mistake again. You won't make it again. It's no longer a part of you. That's different than struggling to hold on. We are the ones who are looking for a shift in consciousness. I'll close with one more story. There was a woman at Ananda many years ago. I don't know all of the details, but I've heard this story. I wasn't there. Who was given a diagnosis of a fatal disease and told that she had a year to live. And she went to Swamiji and she said to Swamiji, what do I do? I've been told I have a year. He said to her a simple sentence. He didn't even expound on it, at least every time I've heard the story. Do not take on the consciousness of the disease. That's what he said. So she thought, what does that mean? What consciousness? She just started practicing. She didn't go with the disease. She started doing affirmations. She started meditating longer. She started serving other people. And she made it a practice. It wasn't, again, just a struggle. Her consciousness shifted. And she lived 10 years. That this is what we're talking about. Let's all work to shift our consciousness. Find some little way. Open that book. Ask yourself, what can I start doing to just refuse to let that negative, downward pulling, contractive energy in, and then spend the next how many hours, months, years, lifetimes justifying it? That's what we do. We just justify it. I don't want to be feeling this, but look what they did to me. How could I have done anything else? Look at the loss. And these are all true, and they're painful. It's not that we don't feel pain, feel compassion, feel hurt. It's where our consciousness is about it that makes all of the difference in the world. And in the end, no matter what practices we have, you know, the longer I'm on the path, the more talks I give, the more classes I teach, the more I realize I'm 70 years old. I started a serious practice of meditation when I was 28. And I could say to you that last night I was sitting there saying to myself, my God, it's so important to meditate and to meditate deeply, to really put everything else aside. Because if we try and win with our mind, it's a no-brainer. It will not work. We have got to change our energy, change our mind, and shift our consciousness. And there is no way other than meditation. Bless you all.